Meet Yave, a lawyer, a wife, a mother, and a creative. As the founder of Pilisa Creatives, she's bridging the gap for children to learn Shona and Ndebele with the use of a multicultural picture book, My First Book of Shona and Ndebele Words. Set in Zimbabwe, this book aims to help children learn these two languages, as the majority of Ndebele and Shona language resources are both scarce and outdated. I sat down with Yave to discuss how Pilisa Creatives was born, her passion for children's literature, and being Zimbabwean in the diaspora, and more.
All right, welcome to Conversations with Lila B. Yave. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here with you.
Oh, thank you so much for making the time.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Just technical difficulties as usual, but you know, we rise above.
Yeah, we're here. We made it.
Yes. So Yeve, before we dive into everything to do with Pilisa Creatives, I wanted to know, how do you think your family and friends would describe you?
Wow. I think they would say that I am a fun-loving, people-loving person, have a optimistic attitude generally, but don't catch me before, let's call it 8, 9 a.m. because I'm super grumpy in the mornings. I'm not a morning person. And yeah, I love life. I really believe in living hard and loving hard. And so I hope they would share some of those things as well.
Oh, well, we definitely have something in common about not being morning people. I used to be a morning person. Not so much anymore.
I mean, you know, we're forced to be morning people because of life and, like, you know, but it's hard, man. That's not my natural, you know.
Yes.
So you know the struggle. You know the struggle. I have a toddler, so I'm forced to be a morning person because she wakes up at sometimes ungodly hours. But yeah, I'm glad you can relate.
Yeah. So Yeva, you were born and raised in Zimbabwe and you migrated to the US, I think at 16 by yourself. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Which one, the migration or growing up in Zim, or both?
Well, both. I mean, what was your experience? Where did you grow up in Zim? And
yeah,
then
sure.
Talk a little bit about migrating at a young age.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Harare. I really look back on my childhood with fond memories. I recall spending lots of time, like, doing things that, you know, are kind of rare now, but like playing with neighborhood kids, you know. And I recall growing up hanging out with my large extended family of cousins, which was a lot of fun. And I went to schools where I was able to forge really good friendships with people, both at the primary school level and then in high school. I went to a boarding school, all girls boarding school. And so, you know, the friendships I developed there are friendships that I hold dear now. And those are like my oldest and some of my closest friends. So really have fond memories. But I always, and I should say, my mom, because I was raised by my mom, she really did an excellent job of like exposing me to so many things. And I recall probably when I was maybe like sixth or seventh grade, her like letting me know that she wanted me to go to the US for college after high school, because she thought that there would be better opportunities there. And she had been educated in the US herself, and so she had firsthand experience. So I went to high school knowing that after O levels at 16 that the plan was for me to come to the US. And so You know, when the time came, that's what I did. And I was fortunate to have my mom's sister, my aunt here in the US. And so the plan was for me to come and stay with her and, you know, spend some time just like acclimating and then kind of chart my own path. Coincidentally, she was a professor at the time at a college. And so that's where I started. And I thought I would leave and go to another school because this college, Claflin University, shout out to CU, is located in Orangeburg, South Carolina, which is a very small town. And it was a bit of a culture shock, a large culture shock, actually, to be honest, coming from Harare, small town, a little bit rural compared to Harare. And so I really was like, oh, no, this is not where I'm going to go to college. Like, this is not what I had in mind.
You're like, you this know, ain't I'm a it. City girl.
I'm like, nah. So I tried actually a few times before my sophomore year of college. I tried to call quote unquote escape through various means. Like I spent a summer in the north, actually in Maryland where I live now, spent a winter break in another city, like just really tried to escape. But you know, life works out the way that it should often. And so all those things just didn't pan out. And I ended up just staying at Claflin, which was the best decision. In hindsight, it was the best decision for sure. And I think once in my sophomore year, I kind of was like, okay, cool, I'll stay. And, you know, had started to make good friends and was really enjoying it. And I went to an HBCU, which was an interesting and awesome experience, having come from a different, you know, school background in Zimbabwe, learning a lot about like HBCUs and African-American culture and all of that. So it was really like, that time was like a big transition, but it was all exciting and fun. And I recall when I was leaving Zimbabwe, I did not cry at all. Like I was just so excited about what lay ahead and what the future was going to be like. It wasn't until maybe like my junior year in college where I was starting to get really homesick. And that's kind of where I had this rediscovery of like, oh my gosh, Zim music and all of that. and I think it was around the time that I also made my trip home, my first trip home after having been gone for like a couple of years, like three, four years, I think. So yeah, that's kind of the journey in a nutshell. And I've been in the US ever since. Ever since 16, outside of a 3-year stint in the UK. I've been here ever since then. So have spent now more than half of my life here.
Yeah,
so this that's is interesting. Home.
Yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that you're like, you know, of course you tried to escape because you're like, this isn't my vibe. I'm used to a city, things are different. But then ultimately, you know, as you said, everything happens for a reason. And I also had like a similar-ish journey. I was in North Carolina and I remember going and feeling like, okay, I don't really know if I fit in, even though I'd grown up going to like an American international school. So I knew a lot of like American people. I knew a lot about whether it was African-American culture or, you know, just white American culture or whatever you want to call that. And I just remember also, after some time, I think for me, it was after 1 year, I just remember thinking like, I actually like miss home and I miss not being different. Cause as much as I was like Black and yes, surrounded by other like Black people, they're African-American, I'm African. There's a huge difference. And I just, you know, didn't feel like I could connect. And I kind of realized I'd taken for granted that growing up, even in Zambia, I was surrounded by people who looked like me more often than not. And in environments where, let's just say, like in terms of the racism, it wasn't as pervasive or as obvious as I experienced when I actually went to the States. So that was very interesting for me.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. I think, yeah, it's funny. I think we talked about this before. We have a lot of shared shared paths. You were in North Carolina, I was in South Carolina, you know, all of that. And like you said, life works out how it should. And, you know, here we are.
Yeah. So you are the founder of Pelisa Creatives. Can you maybe tell the listeners, what is Pelisa Creatives and what is it all about?
Yeah, absolutely. I am the proud founder of Pelisa Creatives. Really something that was born out of my desire to see representation in children's literature and my desire to share a piece of my story, my culture, my heritage with the world. Most importantly, my desire to ensure that my daughter had literature that she could relate to and that kind of explained who she was. And so my debut book is called My First Book of Shona and Dele Words. It is a family book. It is a picture book with three languages, English, Shona, and Dele. And it takes the reader through a daily life in the day, day in the life of a little girl. And Pelisa Creatives is more than just this book. It is really a celebration of African culture, African heritage. It is a celebration of being Black, being African, celebration of being, you know, different, but similar in a lot of ways. And that's kind of the platform that I have built out. It's also, I think, a place where people who have, like you and I, lived in the diaspora and experienced that can kind of connect and share their stories. It's also a place where people who want to learn about diversity, equity, and inclusion can come and do that. And we do that through our social media, which is Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We're everywhere. And that's kind of the community that we foster. That's what we put out there in the world. That's a little bit about Pelisa Creatives.
Yeah, so before we get into a little bit more about the book itself, my first book of Shona and Dele Words, maybe you can share with us, like, why Shona and Dele?
Yeah, absolutely. So I decided to do kind of the unthinkable or the unconventional, and that is to create something that featured both of these languages. And now, just for a little background and context for the listeners who may not be aware, Shona and Ndebele are the two primary languages spoken in Zimbabwe. Those are the two, they also happen to be the two main tribes in Zimbabwe. We have several others in the country. However, those are the two larger ones. And the country predominantly, more people speak Shona than they do Ndebele. And so that is kind of the quote unquote majority. And so typically what happens and what has happened in the past is that you'll often see more literature, let's say, in Shona, or if you do see literature in Ndebele, it's never Shona and Ndebele together. The two tribes have a long storied and often controversial history. There was a lot there that we won't get into here, but they've been at odds, generally speaking, right? And so what I aimed to do was, it's my kind of revolutionary act, kind of celebrating both and saying, listen, these are two important and major tribes in our country and languages, and both should be celebrated. And the reason why that's important to me is because in my household, we are Shona and Ndebele, you know, my husband and I. And so those are the two languages that are spoken in our home in addition to English. And so we wanted our child to know both and to celebrate both and not only identify with one or, you know, the other, but to to know both. And so it was really personal, but at the same time, like, it's bigger than me, right? Because there's just this decades, you know, for hundreds of years, right? The history that's there. And so this is my little revolutionary act to say, you know, we can come together and we can be one, and we are one, right? And so that's why it was important to me. And also, quite frankly, growing up, I was never exposed to Ndebele. I wish I were, and I always wanted to be. But growing up in Harare, we did not get taught Ndebele in school, and there was just no avenue to learn, you know. And so it was always something that I was just like, man, I really wish I learned Ndebele. And I am really, I was very like envious of people who knew both languages, like, man, that's all awesome. And so it's funny that I ended up with a husband who does speak both. That was one of my criteria, must speak in, English on Ndebele. because it's been something that was close to my heart for a long time. So yeah, that's the personal and like the larger picture of why both of these languages. And that's not to say, because a lot of people then ask me, oh, well, are you going to do, you know, the other, are you going to do Kalanga? Are you going to do, you know, all these other languages in Zimbabwe? And I'm like, maybe, maybe not. That's not necessarily like, you know, my goal for doing this was not so that, was not necessarily aimed at like, oh, let's all learn like all the languages and all of that in Zimbabwe. It really, there was a really particular reason why I chose Shona and Ndebele together, you know? So,
and maybe in a way you've inspired someone else who now would want those other languages, whether they would collaborate with you and say, can we translate, or they can write their own stuff and create their own content.
Right.
Because I agree with you.
Go ahead. So, no, go ahead.
I agree with you, obviously, about like historically, the two things have not been, you know, on either side of the same coin. They've been very separate. But I grew up having cousins who were half and half. But then, of course, they also lived in Harare. They only spoke, you know, Shona and English. Then Ndebele, the younger ones, especially, not that great. The older ones, a little bit better. But, you know, for me, I've never seen a difference in us. And I think that's one of the things about our generation. Like, we don't want to carry on generational trauma that happened from things that we were not around for, things that we did not participate in. And we kind of just want to be like, we're one people. Like, at the end of the day, if you are Zimbabwean at this point in 2021, you've suffered the same. You've gone through 100%. The same stuff.
100%. 100%. I completely agree with that. Completely agree with you.
So
I was going to add, actually, when you were talking about books, sorry to cut you off, but like we were talking over each other a little bit, because you, when you said inspiring someone else to do the languages or whatever, one of my friends who's in this space, she's in the UK, shout out to Ronica, she's actually put out some books with other Zim languages, I think Kalanga and I don't recall the other one. And so there are people who are venturing into that, you know. She's got Shona Ndebele, and then she's put out Kalanga, and I forget the other one too. But so there is room for that. It's not necessarily, you know, the direction I might go. I don't know. We'll see. But like, there is room for that for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of it, is that we have so many different languages. We're diverse and rich in our culture, and there's so much opportunity for everyone else to get involved in whichever way they choose to.
100%. There's lots of room for all of us.
Yeah. So as you said, of course, this book was also inspired by your daughter. So I'm assuming that, you know, the little girl and having that little Black girl, Rufaro, as like the lead, that was very important in terms of, I think a lot of times we don't see a lot of female-driven stories, even when they are in children's books. Yes, there's lots of sort of, well, not lots, but there are stories about little girls, but obviously it's little white girls, it's not relatable to us. So is that part of what inspired you?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I will answer that by telling you a little story, an anecdote. So when this book was published and I brought it home and we did like a little reveal at home and we're like looking through it, super excited that like the concept is now like here in the flesh. My daughter picked it up, saw the little girl, Rufaro, and immediately said, "That's me." And like, that's it. That's exactly what, that was the goal. I was like, oh my gosh, yes. You know, I wanted kids, Black kids to pick up this book and see themselves, you know, not just Zimbabwean kids, not just African kids, but just Black kids. There's so little representation in children's literature of Black children. There are more animals in children's books than they are Black people. So like, I was also fighting that, like, no, man, like we need to tell our stories, right? So that was important to me. And then I'll tell another story to answer your question. So Rufaro is Shona, which means joy. It happens to be my middle name. Jabulo is joy in Ndebele. It happens to be my husband's middle name. My daughter, we named her Njabulo as well because we were like, that's both of our names. And so Rufaro is really, it's all of us, right? It's my family, it's me, it's my daughter. It's like, it has a lot of meaning. And so that's also why we made sure that the little girl's character was something relatable for us. And also, I mean, if you look at her, she's got a little afro. You know, she's got brown skin. Like, she looks like me probably at that age. She looks like my daughter. You know, she looks like so many of our children, right? And so I wanted it to be very realistic. Obviously, it's animation and it's illustration. And so, you know, we do what we need to do. But like, yeah, that's the goal. Is like, she has a little puffy afro. And, you know, in the book, you'll see that her family members wear they wear African clothing sometimes, not all the time, because, you know, we don't always wear African clothing, but sometimes they do, and they wear their hair in braids and twists and locks, you know. And so, and
that's one of the things, I hate to interrupt, but that was one of the things that really grabs me about the illustration, is it's the versatility of what our hair is. And the fact that there's so many representations. So, you know, even the little kid that's reading it who has locks is like, oh, the mom in this has locks or whatever it is. Or, oh, braids. It's familiar. And it's, I don't know. It's just so powerful to see images that reflect who we really are and ourselves and the world that we live in.
100%. And the other piece of this is kids who don't look like Rufaro in the book, right? I want them to look at this book and read it and be like, oh my gosh, look, she has a red shirt and she wears shorts and sneakers like me, you know? I want them to see that too. And I also want them to see and be like, oh wow, they're eating whatever. And I've never eaten that, or I don't know what that is, you know? And also see the differences, but also celebrating it, right? And looking at the language and saying, wow, the word for cloud is makore or amayezi, you know? I want that experience for kids who are not Zimbabwean, who are not African. And I'm always very happy when I see Black or Zimbabwean or African people with the book and sharing it with their kids. I get so many messages from people who are, it's typically white folks, who are like, yo, my kids love your book, you know? And it warms my heart because it just goes to show the concept that I envisioned is actually, it's real, right? Which is kids at that, like, at a young age, they're so innocent and they're not like looking and saying, oh, but this is a Black kid and oh, I'm not going to read that book or whatever, right? Like they're just looking and seeing someone who looks like them. They see a little person, they're like, oh, wow, you know, and they're excited about that. And even if they do see that, oh, this is a Black little girl, like that's it. The story is what gets them, right? The illustrations are what make them excited. And so why shouldn't we have more books like this? Like, why is the thinking that, oh, books with white kids should be the norm, right? When it's clear, at least from my very small study of Pelisa customers, it's clear that like kids are kids, right? They just want a fun story. They want, you know, a book, and they are willing to learn about other things. They're open-minded. They're not like adults, right? And so I really hope that we continue to see more diversity in the characters in children's books, and more in particular Black characters in children's book, because they're not just for Black kids, right? It's like they're for all kids. And I say this all the time. I'm getting on my soapbox now, you know. I'm like, African children's books are not for African children. They're for all children, period. Right. And so we might classify this as an African children's book because, hey, it teaches African language. It's set in Africa. It's set in Harare. It's set in Zimbabwe. But it's for all children. It really, really is. Because what are we trying to teach through this? Even if you don't speak Shona Ndebele, you have no reason to learn Shona Ndebele. You don't want to ever be fluent. That's okay. What this book is going to teach you is a new culture. Increase your appetite, hopefully, and open your mind to seeing that there are differences between us, of course, but there are also very many similarities between us as well, right? And a celebration just of, wow, you know, this is how other people do it, and this is how they say things, you know, even if you don't have a desire to be fluent in Shona Ndebele. So there's a lot of things you can teach through this book, including inclusivity, including belongingness, right? Yeah. A little girl in just showing us her day and being excited and being proud of who she is. That's what this book is celebrating. She's like, hey, let me show you my world a little bit, you know? And I think that's beautiful regardless of who you are. So African children's books are not for African children. They're for all children, period.
Yep. I think that's very well said. So speaking of, you know, sort of the book and the stuff that you do, I know that there's Pelisa Creatives has a YouTube channel. I know on your Instagram, you've been doing sort of the different words that we can learn. So days of the week, which like I listen to and I'm like, okay, let me try and learn some Shona. How do I say Monday? Are there any other sort of plans in terms of a whole audio book or something for like the vision impaired so that they can also learn along?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So first, we are in the process of working through an audiobook. We have, you know, part of the thing is trying to make this book accessible, right? And so there's a Kindle version so that you don't have to like worry about getting just the physical copy, whatever. So there's a Kindle version. Next is the audiobook for sure. Because it's important. Not only is it important so that people can hear how you pronounce, but also, like you said, vision impaired. And so that's definitely in the works. And, you know, stay tuned. Stay tuned for sure.
I'm just excited because I can see like how much you know, we're talking right now about the one book in specific, but how much you can even get from that and how much you can do with it before you know, maybe release another one or do whatever other plans that you have. There's just so much more room for like that inclusion and inclusivity. So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely coming. It may not come at the same time as or before and after another book, who knows, because I've already got, you know, some ideas. Of course, my mind is already turning. It's always turning. So yeah, I think you're right, and that's definitely part of, you like, for sure, you know, I'm on the same page, and it'll happen. You guys just keep supporting, download the book, buy the book, you know, that's how we continue to create. It, you know, putting content out there, getting people to subscribe and buy it, and then we can do more, right? Because this is self-funded. I don't have a venture capitalist backing me yet. And so I have so many ideas, but it's also like a capital thing, right? You gotta put out stuff and it has to be consumed, and then you can turn that into something else, right? So yeah, that's kind of where we are.
Oh, beautiful. So we didn't go over this, but so you happen to be, or you are, a lawyer, as well as being a family person and creative.
Yeah.
So the age-old question, which I don't really like to ask because I don't think that there's such a thing as balance, but is there a balancing act? How do you manage all the different things, all the different roles that you have in your life?
Good question. So I am with you. I do not believe in balance. I don't think that exists. I think what I do strive for, and what I think is instead like a bit more attainable, is harmony. And I think harmony for me means that the things that I'm doing are how do I explain? It's hard for me to explain it, but I'm like losing my train of thought right now. But like, essentially nothing is overshadowing, I guess, the other, and the things that I'm doing are really interrelated and compatible. I think that, if that makes sense. So I'm a mom, right? And I'm an author, and I'm a lawyer. And of course, those things sometimes, like, you know, at a certain part of the day, I've got my lawyer hat on, and a certain part of the day, I've got my mom hat on, you know, but I'm always all of those things, right? I'm always all of those things. I don't need to operate in a bucket where I'm like, okay, I can only be a lawyer, I can only be a mom, I can only be an author, I can be all of those things, because I'm striving for harmony. And so the author in me is the creative aspect of, you know, my personality and who I am. But it's also really... It's just a shining light on the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which I strongly believe in. At work, I bring that to the table, right? Mm-hmm. I talk about that, and I'm always pushing for DEI initiatives wherever I am. As a mom, I think about how to raise good children, how to expose children to different things, right? And it's partly why I wrote the book, right? And so there's that, but I also believe in working hard and working to create a legacy. It's also why I wrote the book, but it's also why I work, right? And at work, as a mom, I'm striving to get people to understand that there are so many demands on our time. And so let's be efficient, you know, and also let's understand that people are whole people, whether they're parents or not, they're whole people, right? And so if my kid is sick, and if someone else has, you know, a sick relative, or if they're sick themselves, like, that comes first before work. And so that, you know, I bring that to the table as well. And so all of those things, if you understand what I'm saying, are all interwoven. And I've always been all of these things, right? I wasn't a mom, obviously, until I had, you know, my child, but I've always been a creative. I've always been someone interested in DE&I. I've always been analytical and all of that. So it's no surprise to a lot of people that I'm a lawyer. It's no surprise to a lot of people that I'm an author, like that I'm doing this work. You know what I mean? And so for me, it's about the things being in harmony. And I'm always, always, always in tune with, okay, how do I feel right now about X particular aspect of what I'm doing? Is it depleting me? Do I need a break? And so I often take breaks from social media and Palisa kind of runs, you know, separately, but like my own personal social media. And sometimes I actually took a break, a month break from doing like Palisa interviews and all of that, because there was a time when I was doing so many and I was like tired and I needed to take a break. And so I'm always asking myself that, even with work, I'm like, okay, how am I feeling right now? I think I might need a break. You know, even as a mom, as a parent, as a wife, I take breaks. I take breaks in the sense that obviously you can't like really truly break from those things, but I take breaks in the sense that if I need some time alone, I will do that. You know, sometimes that means going for a walk, long walk by myself. Sometimes that means literally leaving my house and going to a hotel for a night or two by myself. Like, I really believe in all of that. And I think the only way to do all of those things, whatever it is that you are doing, is to make sure that you're constantly in tune with where you're at, with whatever aspect, you know, of the things that you do. You always need to kind of ask yourself, how am I doing? And pay attention. And that's the only way it works for me. You know, otherwise it would be crazy to try and balance and juggle. I would be constantly dropping the ball and I don't like to feel like that. And so that's why it's important to take breaks as needed and to celebrate the wins and to celebrate when, you know, everything is kind of like on cruise control, whatever, like that's how I kind of tackle it.
That's amazing. I think that's so beautiful that you do that for yourself, because I think it's a struggle as women, as Black women, whether you have a family or not, just being able to say like, work is too much right now, or I might be risking my mental health, I might have burnout, I need to be able to do a self-check and know that like, okay, I need a break right now. I think we don't do that often enough, and I commend you for that, because it's not easy, because you do feel like guilty sometimes, whether it's about work or family, you just feel like you might not be doing enough. But meanwhile, you know, the best thing that you can always do for yourself, I always say, the only look after yourself so that you could be there for other people.
Oh yeah, 100%. You can't pour from an empty cup, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what makes you feel successful?
Oh, wow. Listen, talking with you right now makes me feel successfully. Like, you know, I always tell people that when I envisioned Palisa Creatives, I had no idea, no plans to be doing what I'm doing with you right now. You know, I mean, we've gotten to know each other, right, through social media, but I didn't know you. You didn't know me, right? And so here we are doing a podcast interview. And that was never on my radar. That's not, and I've done several, right? I've done several podcast interviews, newspaper articles, and, you know, my book is in stores. Like, I it's just
surreal.
It's surreal. Like, I don't really know what I thought was going to happen. I didn't know what I thought was going to happen, but it has exceeded my expectations. And so for me, I'm living in success. And you know why? It's because I had a dream, I had a vision, and I executed. And I think a lot of us get stuck on, oh, what if this doesn't work? And, you know, but I think part of the success is going for it and having a story to tell, you know, even if it is not quote unquote successful in monetary terms or whatever, but I think there is something to be said about execution, because so many of us suffer from imposter syndrome and anxiety, so many other things that stop us from pursuing dreams that we have, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, this is huge. It's like, this is something that if you look at it just like on the outside looking in, it's like, well, what? Why did she write a book? You know, the question I get a lot of times, like, you're a lawyer, why did you do that? And for me, it's, I'm successful because I have managed to actually create something that is tangible, right? As a creative, you probably know this, like that is one of the highest forms of like, it's to me, honestly, I'm going to say this, it's one of the highest forms of godliness in my view, because, you know, my God is a creator and here I am also creating, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm successful because I've done that. And I'm successful. My vision of success is meeting people that I never knew, never thought I would ever know through this work. And so whatever happens beyond what has already happened is like extra. And it is, I am open to it and I will receive it. And I am, you know, excited about it. But I'm already so blown away and so humbled and so like in awe of what has happened so far that I never planned to. And it's not because I'm like so smart or whatever. It's really, I think, I truly believe, because I executed something that I was supposed to do and God like opened up the path and was like, okay, well, now that you've done that, guess what? Here's the stuff that comes along with that, you know, exceedingly and abundantly more than I could ever ask or think. That's kind of where I'm at. And that's not to say that I have made millions off this book. I have not yet. I have not. And that's not even the goal, to be honest with you. It's not about the monetary aspect. It's really just about what I've seen can be possible, the connections, the way in which this book has touched people and the Palisa platform, you know, the feedback I get from all corners of the world, people I don't know, people who don't know me. Like, yeah, that is what success means to me.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And I totally agree with you. I think the thing is to like start with that idea that you have and just execute. And even if your execution isn't perfection or whatever it is, you can always build from that. You can always learn from that. And, you know, I don't also believe in defining success in financial terms. Of course, being financially better off is a positive thing. We will not deny that. But at the same time, I think, you know, it's the work that you're doing, being a creative. I think a lot of creative people want to be able to just connect. And it's that thing of connecting with other people, whether they're all the way across the world or next door to you, just having that thing where you, whatever it is that you've put out into the world resonates with someone, a small group of people, a big group of people, or just someone.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so I have a few rapid fire questions for you to answer. You have to answer them in one word.
Ooh,
okay, one okay, or two okay. words. We'll keep it short. Maybe a sentence, okay. But you know.
Okay.
I'm a writer. You know I'm gonna talk. So okay.
I know, right?
I'm ready.
What inspires you?
Oh, my daughter, my family.
Is that the same as what drives you?
Wanting to be the better version of myself drives me.
What calms you?
Water, the ocean. Anytime I'm by the water, I feel good. A lake, whatever it might be.
Oh my gosh, I feel like we're twins. Those are the only three questions I had for you in regards to that. But I love.
I'm waiting. I'm like,
no,
wait.
No. It was only the three because I felt like you were gonna have the answers that could resonate with people. And I am the same as you. A body of water. Oh,
yeah.
I'm at peace.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we go, can you just quickly tell our listeners where they can find you on social media or online?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I will tell you, but I know that you're going to include it in like the show notes as well, because Pelisa is hard for people to, when they see it, they don't know that it's pronounced that way. It's in the Ndebele word. So you can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. Our YouTube channel is like not really active. Hey, I'm searching for help with that. So I'm putting it out there. Anybody listening who wants to assist with that. And then you can find us on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere where books are sold, really. And also on www.pelisacreatives.com. And Pelisa is P-H-I-L-I-S-A. And creatives is as it is said. Although on some platforms it's with a Z at the end instead of an S, but once you find one, you'll find the rest. Look forward to hearing feedback from you all, to learning more and sharing more with you all. And I hope to get a copy, whether it's a Kindle ebook version or a physical copy of this book in all of your hands. We deliver worldwide. Please support and, yeah, gift it to somebody you know who has kids. I promise you, you'll be their favorite. So that's my plug. And yeah, thank you, Lee. This has been awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's it from Yeva and I. Thank you so much for being a guest on Conversations with Lila B today. I appreciate you. I appreciate the work that you're doing. It's impactful, it's powerful, and I love it.
Check the show notes for links to Yeva's work. Before we go, show a little love for your favorite podcast on Anchor by sending us a round of applause, giving us a star, and leaving us a voice message on Anchor. Who knows, you could get a shout out on the next episode. You can also email me at conversationswithlilab@gmail.com. That's it for this episode. Remember to look out for more episodes and to continue to join the conversation. Until next time.